know you can't meditate. If you afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Let me see you get loose.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. The Max Exodus has begun. Players leaving Berea in droves as the final minicamp practice has wrapped up. They are off now until training camp. So they are making their way off to their vacations. The final kind of, you know, respite before the grind of the season fully gets underway. So those guys were all heading out. Talked to Joe Hayden on his way out. Very excited to have this time, but also excited to get back to work as they wrapped up minicamp today. As a player, is it bittersweet, or is it like, all right, we put in some work, we've gotten where we need to be, now let's go get right, get relaxed, get ready, and then come back?
It's a combination. It really is. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that you've been in town, if you don't live here in Northeast Ohio, for now, say, you know, 2 months, 3 months, working on your craft. You deserve a little bit of a break to dive into whatever it is that you enjoy, whether it's, you know, being a family man, going back out of state to see your family and friends, because all these young men know that when they do return, there's one goal, or goals have been set for position groups and this team in general, and it's the nose to the grindstone. That communication with your family whittles away. The communication with your family in another state or seeing them is essentially gone until they may potentially travel to Cleveland or in one of your road games to see you then. So it's your time to get your fix, whatever that is. And it is bitter, but it is also too bittersweet, because I'm sure for some of these young players, they were just now starting. It was starting to click and starting to groove for them. And that's why I wouldn't be surprised that if the opportunity is out there for them to stay here in town, most likely at the hotel or, you know, I don't know where they're putting them up, these young players, but to stay here in town and maybe go home for a week, but get back as soon as possible, because a lot of these coaches will enjoy some of this free time, but they, unlike the players, are going to dive in and continue to fine tune and tweak. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next, you know, 2 weeks, halfway through this break, or that if every single practice in training camp is scripted out meticulously, exactly what we're going to cover, what we're going to reinstall, what we know we don't have to reinstall, and by the time you get ready for that preseason game, you're now getting it, that graduate level conversation starts entering again, as it took us an entire OTA session to get to. You're having that very early into training camp.
Yeah, and it's could it be exciting? The coaches are looking forward to that rest, but as you said, they can't wait for training camp. Coaches can't wait to see actual football be played and the competitions and battles that are going to emerge here on this roster as they get ready to pare this thing down to, you know, the final 53.
Yeah, and standing with Ray Farmer, he said the same thing. You know, right, today was a fast pace. I think Mike Pettine might have cut out a period or two. You know, and when I say it's not like it's 11-on-11 periods. You want that quality work, but he might have tapered down an individual session and blown the horn 3-4 minutes early, you know, blown the horn maybe on a group session or a special team session, cut that by 3 or 4 minutes, which allows you to cut off 12 minutes of practice, get those guys out, get them early, throw them that little bit of a bone. And believe me, I've been on some very good teams, and when a coach is happy with the work, the bone gets thrown. When he's not and feels like there's something left to accomplish, that bone does not get thrown.
What did you think about the fact that Houston, Tampa Bay, who was the worst team in the league last year, they canceled the third day of their minicamp?
And Indianapolis did as well.
And the Colts did as well.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
It does.
Me too.
This is, and you're talking about teams that, well, minus the Colts, who were the AFC finalists last year.
AFC finalists. Good point.
The discounting one work day. And I just don't think that if I were a fan, that would be a good thing. It's a good sign, but it's not something that I want yet. Show me 2 years of that, and then you deserve your time off. If I were management or a general manager or owner, knowing the doldrums of, you know, where Tampa Bay has been as of recent, knowing where, you know, Houston has been, they've been to the high, and then they've been back to mediocrity. And for them to cut off, you know, time for that quarterback battle that they have going on gives you one less day. If I were a player, you know, having time off is having time off. But if I'm chomping at the bit to make a roster or to potentially be a starter on a football team, I want that extra day to showcase my abilities and solidify my role coming into training camp, which is, you know, 30-plus days from now.
Yeah, the Browns will be getting at it today. The coordinators all spoke, and we'll have that for you probably later in the week, because today we've got a loaded show for you. We've got head coach Mike Pettine's press conference, the final one after the last day of minicamp. We've got Randy Starks. We will have him in studio, and we will have Josh McCown's press conference as well. So a lot to get to here today. The coordinators, though, as I said, spoke today. And really today's show for you in terms of interactivity, 216-578-0850, tweet us, is what questions do you have about minicamp, roster, particular players? We were out there all 3 days, and I actually got an opportunity to interview Mike Pettine this morning for about 30 to 45 minutes talking about this team, what's been going on. That you'll see that on Inside the Cleveland Browns and Dog Pound Report, you know, this weekend and next weekend on News Channel 5. That's Sundays beginning at 11, that one-hour block there. And also get it at Browns, ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. But in talking to him, what he's so excited about is the competition. Gave me the lowdown on some players, et cetera. So if you have questions, today's a good day to get into them. And one thing I want to focus on that came out of the coordinator talks that's getting picked up nationally is that Jim O'Neill said he believes the Browns can have the best secondary in the league. And I'm going to say this, and we've talked about it. I believe it too. Who are the best secondaries in the National Football League in your mind? That's one of our Ohio Business Machine hot topics today. Who are the best secondaries? Because I know that, you know, Seattle, they get a lot of pub, but they continue to lose people every single year. They are very, very good. Don't get me wrong. And you also get a lot of pub for the Jets because of what they've done, you know, bringing in Revis,
sure,
Cromartie, Buster Screen. I really believe, though, and this is not me being a homer, I think that maybe you could make the case that some of those that right now what the Jets have, 1, 2, 3, might be the best in the league. But when you talk about 1 to 5 or 6, I think the Browns are as deep and as talented a secondary as there is in the NFL.
Yeah, and as you were talking about the others, and yes, another team may have more talent right now, but in regards to depth, the other word you know, that comes into play is I think we have the most complete secondary, because not only do we have the talent, as you mentioned, 1 to 6, but we have guys that are very good at their roles, meaning Joe Hayden, Tremont Williams, outside guys. You've got Kaywan Williams, who is going to be most likely one of the best in the business at his role at nickel corner. And then you evolve into the Justin Gilberts, the Pierre Desir, and so on and so forth. We got Charles Gaines, a rookie that we drafted this year, that's going to have to fight to make this roster. But then you look at our safeties. Two of the best safeties in the National Football League. And I think that when you talk about Seattle, they're the first team that pops in your head, simply because you got Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor.
Yep. Okay,
but that other guy has been good, and everyone else around him and the defensive scheme that they play in has made them great.
And you've seen Walter Thurman leave. Now, yes,
Byron Maxwell
has left.
Yeah.
So they've, and Brandon Browner has left. So they've lost a lot of people. And that's why the depth. And don't forget, you talked about, you threw in, factored in the safeties.
Yes.
Which is important. But the Browns sent both starting safeties last year to the Pro Bowl. Yep. Dante Whitner to Sean Gibson. Jordan Poyer has been one of the stars of the offseason per the coaches. He stepped up. They love Ibrahim Campbell, who they drafted. And I'll tell you what, Deontay Saunders. We talked about him yesterday on the live look-in, which you can get if you missed it. You can get at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. Deontay Saunders, number 44, made 2 interceptions today and continues to play very, very well. He's a guy that was very talented, played at the University of Florida, started all of his games in 2 years, and then had some off-the-field issues that put him on a different path to the NFL, but another undrafted guy, much like Isaiah Crowell was. Big-time SEC school, played very well, ends up out of the SEC in a small school, undrafted, and that's what Deontay Saunders is, and he's looked very good. So this is, it is deep, and I'm curious to hear people talk about if it's not the Browns, how confident are you that the Browns do have the best secondary, top to bottom, and if not, who are the teams that you're looking at? Who's in that discussion with you? Because it is an interesting one, because if you can stop the run and force teams to throw on you in obvious passing situations, you bring in a Nate Orchard, you've got Paul Kruger, hopefully you can unleash Mingo, Scott Solomon, Armani Bryant, etc. You got some pass rushers there. But if you remember, good secondaries can make pass rushers more effective.
Absolutely.
Quarterback has to hold the ball an extra sack.
Yes.
That term, coverage sack, that's what the Browns, I think, have an opportunity to get a lot of in obvious passing situations.
No doubt. In obvious passing situations, with your ability to stop the run, you should have and again, as I continue to talk about being a numbers guy, say one more of those a game, you know, or I'll say even two more a game. You're talking 32 more very evident opportunities for our outside pass rushers and Jim O'Neill to get into some of those exotic man blitzes to where the back end is covered so well that that quarterback's either scrambling, you get a no gain, you get him scrambling out, you get him running out of bounds, throwing the ball out of bounds, and you have an opportunity to put one of your skilled playmakers back on the field in a punt returner and get the ball back. Get the ball back to that offense, allow you to grind out the, you know, the ground game, strategically throw the ball down the field, and of course this, the short to intermediate passing by Josh McCown and his weapons plays right into our favor.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's what it's going to be, and you're going to see more and more of that, the short passing, the movement around, creating mismatches, trying to put defenses in situations where they have to deal with a rule breaker, as we saw yesterday. It's going to be fun. I'm looking right now at the Seattle Seahawks current depth chart. So they've got at corner, they've got Richard Sherman, Kerry Williams, who they signed, former Baltimore Raven, who and New York Jet, I believe, who had a tough year last year with the Jets. And then their slot corner is Jeremy Lane, who's okay. But he got hurt in the Super Bowl, if you remember.
Yep.
So he's coming off of a pretty serious injury. Then they've got, obviously, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. So it, that is a good – that's good.
Right.
So according to them, they've got two elites, one high quality, and two averages in their secondary amongst their starters.
So and what do they have for the Cleveland Browns?
That's what I'm pulling up
okay.
right now.
Because I would think you'd have
– So the Browns have one, two – they have everybody in the Browns secondary is considered good or better. No elite. So they have Hayden as a high quality, so that's the dark green. So they have...
That's one step below elite.
They have two dark greens and three greens in the secondary. Plus they have Justin Gilbert rated as average and Pierre Desir rated as average.
Right, which we hope they improve upon that.
Right, so compared to... So the way they do it...
Is this Pro Football Focus?
This is Pro Football Focus. Seattle's got two elite guys. They have one good, and then they have two average out of their top
so
five.
So is it... Sherman, Thomas, elite.
Yep.
Chancellor, good.
Yep.
And then a drop
Williams
off.
Williams and Lane are both
on
average.
The next guy.
Whereas we're green across the board. They have Hayden and Whitner both rated top quality. And then good is Gibson, Tremont Williams, Kayvon Williams. Plus you have two averages of the backups in Gilbert and Pierre Desir.
And you'll take that. I think
sure.
I think Kayvon Williams will only grow into a high quality player, as we've seen as an undrafted free agent. He's probably bumping on their or knocking on the door of being a high quality player, just needs more opportunity. And you have to continue to prove yourself, and he will have to do so to get paid. And then you look at Tremont Williams, a lot of that has to do probably simply because his number's high, he's in a new system, and he's probably going to get a lot of work opposite Joe Hayden. You know, might be a lot of the reason why he's not a high quality, but I think he can play at a high quality level. And what's very intriguing to me about how this is all going to kind of pan out is, where are you going to go? Who are you going to go
at?
Who are you going to target? Because you got a guy in Kayvon Williams who can cover anybody. He's covering some of the best right now from an elusive small slot wide receivers in Andrew Hawkins and Taylor Gabriel. Then you can throw at Joe Hayden, and you can throw at him maybe week one to week three, getting off to that slow start, which we hope he doesn't do again, but for the middle portions of the year, he was as good, if not better, than Richard Sherman and Revis and Cromartie and Peterson and all those in Orlando
sure.
Scandrick and those guys, okay? And so, and then I think the one great thing that I've seen thus far is Dante Whitner's ability to cover. You know, he's not someone that's, that you talk about, oh, Dante can cover any tight end or any slot, guy in all of football. But what he's improved upon from a man-to-man standpoint with his confidence as a player, he'll walk down and cover anybody too. And that's
yep.
something I think he's gotten better and fine-tuned this offseason.
And that's one of the reasons why you see when the Browns go to dime, when they go with the three safeties, three corners, they want the reason they do that and they move Whitner down to the line, they can bring in Poyer and have him in the back end, basically have two free safeties manning it back there with Gipp, is they want him to be counted when the team's counting guys in the box. He can provide
sure.
run support, and he can also cover the tight ends, as you pointed out. So the Jets, interesting. Darrell Revis, elite. Cromartie, Gilchrist, and Pryor, all average, Buster Screen, below average. So they would give the Browns...
Milner's
graded as average as a backup.
Okay.
So they would give the Browns a huge advantage over them.
Sure. So they're not even in the conversation.
They're not even in the conversation. Again, this is Pro Football Focus, but according to them, they're not in the conversation. I'm trying to think what other...
Who else is so complete on a defensive back end. You could say years ago, a few years ago, it might be the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay. I think you could make, well, they would say that also in the conversation, but again, they don't match up with the Browns, would be the Green Bay Packers. You got Sam Shields, who gets a green.
Yep.
You get Hayward, who gets a high-quality green.
So Ha-Ha Clinton Dix.
You got Ha-Ha Clinton Dix gets an average. Morgan Burnett gets a green. And then Micah Hyde in the slot also gets a yellow. So they would have two yellows, two greens, and one elite green. The Browns have two elite greens and three greens. They're the only team that's got five greens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not that crazy.
No, it's not.
It is not that far-fetched.
And believe me, the league knows this. The other teams know this. You know, and that's why I think a lot of teams' game plans early in the season are going to stress our defensive front, because it's going to be very difficult to stress and run away from and outwit some of those players because of how great they are.
So then the other team that's got some good grading, the Bengals have Pac-Man Jones gets a low green, Leon Hall gets a low green, Nelson and Ioka, the safeties, both get low greens, and they have Drake or Patrick as an average. So they have nobody high quality or elite, but they get at least four greens in Cincinnati.
So we've discussed thus far like the top five teams that they've got it ranked, basically.
Yeah, and I'm trying
Jets,
to look,
Bengals.
I'm trying to think who else it could be. Not Arizona. And they have
How
Peterson.
About the Cowboys?
No, they're sick.
With Scandrick?
Let's see. Cowboys. They've got for the Cowboys, they have got Brandon Carr gets a yellow. Claiborne's below average. Free safety below average. Strong safety average. Slot corner Orlando Scandrick gets a high quality.
So that's scary that Morris Claiborne is below average.
He has not panned out.
No.
He has not panned out. So interesting. I mean, I think it is a legitimate discussion that you can make the case that it is the best secondary. You can make a case it's arguably the best starters in the secondary,
yes.
1 through 5. And then I think when you look at the depth, and I'll tell you what, and I know everybody's saying, oh, this is your guy. You jock him. Whatever. There is a buzz right now amongst the coaches and the players about the work Pierre Desir is doing. And he was, again, taking first-team reps today with opposite Joe Hayden, as Tremont was out. Justin Gilbert was attending to a personal issue. He was taking the first-team reps. They went at him multiple times with Brian Hartline, and Brian Hartline came up with zero catches.
And when we had Taylor Gabriel here in the studio, he said the one thing that he loves is how diverse that defense or the cornerback room is. You know, you've got Joe Hayden, one of the best in the National Football League. You've got Tremont Williams, experience. You've got Kwan Williams, who can cover as well as anybody in the as a nickel corner. But then he made Justin Gilbert, freak athlete, but Pierre Desir, long, physical.
Long.
You know, he makes those plays a huge, you know, they talk about catch radius. Well, he's a deterrent to that radius because of how long and rangy he is as a corner.
Well, there was one where Hartline got a good move, didn't get much separation, but was a good move, and McCown threw a perfect ball that just got over Pierre, but Hartline ended up not being able to catch it, and I think due in large part because you can't see the football.
Right.
Pierre's bigger than you. You're looking up. You're looking almost through his helmet, and
sure.
Hartline was not able to come down with it, but he has played very, very well. This is a good, 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 good secondary and a good defense, and I think you're looking right now at a Cleveland Browns team that is going to have an opportunity to really make some noise. And to, again, you just joined the show, Fez. If you're just joining the show, you just missed it. Aaron Esterly says, as a Missouri guy, how does his ear look? Played very well down the stretch. Love the show. Thanks. We just talked about him. There's a lot of buzz about him. He's playing very well, and I think he has the opportunity to develop into one of those dominant 1A corners. You're a good number two and a guy who can match up with all the big receivers. And when you look at this division, you know, with a Martavis Bryant going to start playing a bigger role, you're going to need him at Mohamed Sanu, A.J. Green. These are big receivers. You're going to need a guy like that to match up with them. Think about Brandon Browner when he was opposite Richard Sherman in Seattle.
You're absolutely right. And I think what's great as you look at it, you talk about a guy like Martavis Bryant, you have the big physical corner in Pierre Desir. Tremont Williams has experience of playing Megatron there in Detroit as well. But as Taylor Gabriel talked about the guy that he looks up to, Antonio Brown. What, as talented as this defensive backfield is, I know Joe Hayden may not, you know, want to accept this, but I think that this defensive backfield has the ability to give Antonio Brown different looks. You know, Joe Hayden's going to want to follow him all across the field. Joe Hayden predominantly doesn't play well against that small, shifty, wide receiver that can run all the routes. But Kwan Williams can. You know, Pierre Desir is going to give him a big physical look. And I just think that as you scheme weekly for a playmaker, let's just not go, let's go best on best. Let's go, let's give him different looks. A guy that cannot, you know, get him. Who I know Joe Hayden's a very well-rounded, that's what makes him so great, but to give him a look of a K1 on one down and then Dazeer later in the game and then, you know, a Hayden predominantly as the game goes on, or because all these guys do different things better than the other. And I just think that's the way you kind of like that hiccup look, as you saw LeBron. Barnes and Livingston and Iguodala are all going to cover him a little bit different, you know, which makes LeBron have to think, how am I going to score? How am I going to get to the basket? How can I take advantage of this guy over the next? You get Antonio Brown thinking, yep, as opposed to just lining up and going, oh, I got Hayden again. I know he struggles with X, but you're getting a steady mix of a very talented, different talent level in that defensive backfield.
Well, and also one thing that they're doing, I know this year, is they're doing a lot of cross-training. You know, last year, Joe Hayden would only go in the slot to play man, and it was a tell for the opponents. If Joe Hayden followed your best guy in there, he was manning him up. Well, now this year, because you're in the graduate level, you're more comfortable, you can teach Joe and Tremont to go into the slot and play zone looks out of that and further confuse defenses. So I think they're going to do things this year the teams have not seen at all from the Browns on tape until it is unleashed.
Exactly. And to expound on your point too, when you get to that graduate level, you could essentially play almost like a box and one in basketball, where Joe Hayden may follow a certain player around and line up on him. And Joe will in fact guard that guy man to man, but you're gonna play zone around it. You're gonna play that three shell behind it, but you're gonna have Joe locked up. You know, and of course there'll be rules, you know, with where if he motions, what happens? Is the man off? You know, do we go back to him playing cover? Whatever it is. But they'll figure it out. That's the level of thinking that this defense is going to be in year two. What Jim O'Neill and Mike Pettine and these defensive coaches have to understand is what gives us the best consistent way to win on first, second, and third down consistently. Consistent, consistent, consistent. Because you don't want to be able to do it one week and then you get struggle the next, and you got to throw stuff out.
Got to be consistent.
It's got to be consistent. That's the one thing for these players trying to make this roster. A coach would rather have you work so hard to get to a certain point and have you level off and plateau for 16 games because they know exactly what they're getting, rather than have a great performance, then a down performance, then a great one back up. That up and down will give a coach gray hairs, and it's the easiest way out of town.
Yeah, and it's you need to be consistent. Bill Belichick preaches it all the time. All right, a lot of fun here in this first segment. When we come back, get your calls, your mini camp questions, 216-578-0850. Still to come, Mike Pettine's post-practice presser, Randy Starks, Josh McCown, the Jort Report, and you. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.